Hello, everyone. We are so excited to introduce today's guest, Dr. Katie Desiderio, a powerhouse professor of management and principal partner at Proximal Development. She is dedicated to igniting leadership and boosting performance through genuine learning. Having shattered ceilings as the first female chair of her department at Moravian University, Katie understands the power of connection and growth firsthand. As a co-author of the Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestsellers, The Beekeeper and The Stargazer, she brings a wealth of wisdom on cultivating thriving teams, unlocking individual brilliance, something we deeply value here at Love at Work. Welcome, Katie.
Laura, thank you, Caroline. It's so great to be with both of you today.
Thanks for being with us. It's an honor. And especially for me, because it's our first time meeting officially. And yet we, Laura and I, have put forward a topic that actually interests you enough to make time, to spend time with us, to do all the prep. So right off the bat, my question is, like, what is it about the provocation that is love at work that makes you want to be with us today?
So I love that you're opening with this and in the space of just curiosity, right? Like, why are you here? Why is this important? What's the returns? And I care. And so I put that, I care, dot, dot, dot. There's so much that goes into this work of helping one another rise. I care so much about working with people with a shared mission and in the space of recognizing how we can ripple just to make the world better in the people we touch and the work we do and the way that we think about the future.
Yeah, it's awesome that we are able to rally around an emotion and essentially see how we can turn it into business. So what is it about the word love that you've seen in your work resonate with business leaders?
You know, I've seen lots of different responses to the emotion of love at work. I've had, you know, experiences where people feel a deep sense of vulnerability and, you know, a very guarded approach to, I can't express that emotion here, or that's inappropriate, or right, I should probably shy away from the topic. More recently in the work that I'm doing with, you know, women leaders, there's a lean in and listen to how do we link arms and think about love, that we love each other and we love the work we do. We love the opportunity to be able to shatter glass ceilings and think about how we pave the way for the next generation. And in that, there comes so much energy and the opportunity to think about love in ways that really does move mountains and has the opportunity to just help people see things in themselves that they might not see in themselves, right, without you.
Yeah, totally. Do you think that it's, you know, and I know we talk about women, we're all women here today. Do you think that this is a topic that is more approachable to women, or have you seen it also sort of make a resurgence with the men that you work with?
Yeah, I've seen both.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, in one of the books that I co-authored, The Stargazer, there's an undertone of building your star system, right? And yeah. And these are people that, you know, help you shine brighter, better, richer, stronger. And in my star system, it's both men and women.
Yes.
And this topic of just like this innate passion for the work we do, right? For the love of the work, right? To lean in and, you know, sometimes it's not glamorous and sometimes it doesn't feel great, but it's worth it.
It's and not so always all love, right? It's sometimes there's not so much love, but it's still the work. Yeah.
But, you know, it's even, you know, when I think about as a mom, the feeling of love that I have, it's not all glamorous, right? But there's a deep Absolutely. Sense of it matters, right? And we do it because we care. And so in the members of my star system, both men and women, you know, there's an innate place of opening up the conversation to think about what this means, but even more than that, like, kudos to both of you. How are we talking about it? How are we creating
Thank you.
environments to open up the conversation and to allow us to actually turn the mirror and say, like, what do I think of this? Right? Or I hadn't even thought about it. And maybe I'm not even generating the space with the people that I'm working with and through to talk about what that looks or feels like.
Totally. Yeah, it is as simple as having a conversation. I think at this point, I'm glad that it resonates with you because this is not an easy time. Like being vulnerable, being emotional, being fully present, fully human, fully integrated at work. As much as that's what we want to do when we go to work to find our purpose, it's so counterproductive or counterintuitive in the actual setting of work that sometimes for us, for Laura and I, it's like, let's start having this conversation. Let's show people what it's like to show up in love, the feeling and the sort of the integrity of it, so that we can try to make it be part of the work that we do at work.
And Caroline, you know, I want to add something to what you shared. And for so long in the student setting at the university, my students would say, I could tell you love what you do. I could tell you love, right, my success. And during the period of COVID, when we were pulling everything, you know, into our homes, where there were blurred lines and maybe kids running in the backgrounds, or calling you, right, to come help them with their Zoom call. I had this, you know, really deep reflection about self-love. And Laura and I have talked a lot about this
Yes.
topic. And so when we think about love and leadership, I think sometimes we forget that it first starts with you. And that's been for me a lot of the work that I've been doing over the last few years is I want to love everyone, right? And love the work I do, but I can't do that if I'm not loving me first. And so in that space of the self-love, right, it really is in, you know, the tri-level of leadership. We always start at the individual level,
Yeah.
right? With you, form a relationship with yourself. Think about how you're allowing yourself, right, to learn and grow and show up in a place of authenticity. And then, right, we start to create the conditions and environment for the people around us to be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, are you finding in your work that this topic is difficult to for leaders, you know, in the traditional corporations, if you will, to accept? Like, is it gaining traction, this self-love concept in corporate leadership in America and beyond?
So in the spaces I'm working in, I'll say yes, right? And seemingly I think I'm being invited to those spaces because people want to talk about and figure out, right, as we're culture building, how are we starting at the individual level, right? Finding meaning in each individual person's connection to their work. And so, you know, oftentimes in you know, in a lot of the leadership work I do, I spend probably more time, especially with adult learners, on unlearning than on learning, right? How do we unlearn some of the things that we've preconditioned ourselves to think that we should do or is right or that we have to do to be seen or heard or respected or promoted or whatever it is? And let's erase that and let's start with a blank canvas. And start to show up in the place of how, who am I? How do I want to leave people feeling after an interaction with me? What do people experience when they work with me, right? And as we start to do this with individuals, right, we're doing a lot of reflection that creates some of the connection. And I know we were talking about, you know, when we work with groups that already trust each other, right? Or work well together, they've done
Right.
some of the tough work, right? Where they've been through times where they've been able to reflect and you'll think about those vulnerabilities in ways that become really powerful and meaningful.
Yeah, that really hits the unlearning, Laura.
Huge, so huge. Huge. Wait, Katie, specifically, what is it that you're asking people to unlearn? Like, what's the thing they have to unpack for themselves in order to create space to be loving, caring leaders?
Yes, yeah, so Laura, I love that you're asking this. There's a big one, and it comes in this, you know, as we think about companies embracing this opportunity, One of the big things I ask people to unlearn, and there's often big gasps when it happens, is let's unlearn the golden rule. So we've been taught from a very young age to treat others as you want to be treated. But hey, guess what? People want to be treated the way they want to be treated, right? That's platinum rule. And so there's a place there of unlearning, like what I want and need is going to look and feel different than what Laura needs and Caroline, what you need, right? But how do I lean in to say, let me get to know you and what's different that you want and need than what I want and need? And it opens up a different, you know, authenticity of communication and how we connect with each other and how we think about the questions that we ask, you know, creating a space where we're curating, you know, curiosity.
Yes.
That helps us in that way forward. And so, Laura, there's an undertone there of Carol Dweck's work, right, in growth mindset. And so in the unlearning, it's like, we're moving out of the, like, let's not be fixed in what is, right? If there's something that makes me feel unrest, it's when people are like, well, Katie, you're the subject matter expert. Katie, you have your PhD. No, no, no. I'm not coming in with any credentials right now. I'm coming in as Katie with the space to share all my goodness, but I want to learn from you. I want to unlearn with you. I want to think about the way forward. I don't have all the answers, right? But together, we can figure out a lot of greatness, right, as we think about that way forward.
Have you seen specific examples? Like, I love a use case, because when we talk about these feelings, one thing that I had to unlearn is your feelings don't belong at work. Yeah. When working in customer experience type of topics, where people come to you with a need or something that they want to have fixed or something that they desire, like, we're in the space of emotion. So something I had to unlearn is that my emotions do have a place at work.
Yeah.
And it's how I manage them and how I use them to create value, as opposed to be destructive or to be, you know, dramatic or all the things that emotions are usually attached to. So I'm really interested in, like, a use case where you've worked with a student or you've worked with an adult learner or you've worked with a client or any kind of examples where you've seen results based on this approach and the sort of self-love and unlearning and the kind of results that you've been able to see in the marketplace with this approach.
Yeah, so I've been doing work with the Women's Urologic Health Alliance for some time now, thinking about the space of, you know, the future of women in urology. And you know, one of the things they came to me with in one of their conferences is, what is your leadership love language? And I deconstructed love, right, to really kind of think about love in the acronym for L, listen to understand. When we're listening to understand, we are showing up in a place where we're not enacting golden rule. We're enacting platinum rule, right? Tell me about you. Tell me about your needs. We're thinking about how we end sentences less with periods and more with question marks, right? That we're not making assumptions. And two, that we're finding alignment in intention and impact. You know, my intention could be, I want to help you. The impact could be, you just took the wind out of my sails and I don't want to work with you anymore. And if that's lost on me, right, then we're not going to have the opportunity to think about a way forward. In O, right, that's our openness, eyes, ears, mind, heart, where we bring in Carol Dweck's work of growth mindset. And in that place of openness, it's not only in sometimes the rewiring of how we prime association of things, even like conflict, right?
Right.
We could think that, like, conflict is at odds with love. No, actually,
it's not.
Right? I think about these conversations I have with my children, very productive conflict in the spirit of love, right? And so let's push each other, right, to start to generate learning opportunities and a way forward. But it encourages lens check moments. And so we talk about this in The Beekeeper, is oftentimes, you know, what we see is not really, right, what could be, right? We become fixed in, right, what might be right in front of us, or how we've primed ourselves to see certain people, situations, opportunities. the V, it goes back to something, Caroline, that you talked about, and that's really leading with our values. There's an innate vulnerability for us to think about the emotions that are tied to values-driven leadership, right? And so I will undoubtedly have an emotional response.
Yes.
If my core value of communication is compromised, I want alignment. I want to make sure that at a minimum, we do what we say we will do, right? And so when I'm working with people, I'm very clear about communicating my personal core values. But then for us to talk about shared values, right, mm-hmm. in that way forward, so that we start to kind of pull people into an environment that feels authentic and safe, and very much that our emotions have, right, a place, a seat at the table. And then finally, the E is about bringing in the five tenets of emotional intelligence. I really draw on Goleman's work there, but that's first, right? It starts with first, the self-awareness, right? How are we turning the mirror? Who am I? How do I show up? Am I motivated to stretch, to learn, to see you, right? Then goes into self-regulation. This is the place that we're not self-regulating if we don't know our core values, right? So oftentimes you have emotions, you're like, I don't even know why I feel that. I don't know what's happening. But when we do the self-work, we're like, I know exactly why I feel the way I feel right now. And then how do I think about, right? Maybe I'm picking up the phone and calling a member of my star system. Like, hey, you need to help me diffuse this in my head first before I respond outwardly, right? The fourth is, of course, right, our social awareness, right, that we're able to see people, that we're able to create that alignment of intention and impact. And then, of course, in empathy, right, that we're pulling in the opportunity to lead with empathy.
Have you gotten some feedback from the women, the urologists of the future initiative that you talked about how they have evolved, how they've transformed, how their culture has been impacted by this work?
Yeah, so I think more than anything, similar to what you and Laura are doing here, is they're creating platforms and opportunities for the conversation to happen in the first place. And so when they think about the future of their field, women, right, have not been those who have the dominant space, mm-hmm. right, in urology.
Right.
And so as more women come into the field and they think about the future, they need to think about succession planning, right? In ways that is opening up the conversation, right? What's different in just practices, right, that men needed that women didn't, vice versa? How are we creating environments where women can be successful, right? As we think about the future. And so, yes, I mean, this is ongoing work, but very much men and women in the field who, for the love of the work they do, right, are creating the opportunities to have the discussions, to think about how we're, right, helping practices think about the future and the success of the people coming through.
Yeah.
Are you seeing?
Oh, go ahead, Laura.
I was just going to ask, Katie, are you seeing from their perspective, from the practitioner's perspective, a change in patient outcomes or the quality of the relationship they have with their patients as a result of a greater focus on both values-based leadership and the whole idea around love of the work and how that translates into love of the patient and the outcome?
So this has become a common theme that they share, is that the work they do is for the love of the patients. And so in the spirit of that, how are we thinking about creating the strength of what's ahead, and that we're pooling in, right, women, doctors that will be successful mm-hmm. in this space who equally care about the patients. And so in a lot of this, right, there's the turn the mirror moment of, in order for me to show up for my patient in the way that I want or need, I have to make sure I feel full. I have to make sure that I'm not, right, on call all night working through, right, and that I'm able to say I need refuel, right? Who's on call tonight? And so there's just awareness building there of, you know, perceived balance. And I think it's operationalized different And what we've learned is a lot of it is generationally driven, right? Is when we think about balance, right? Different generations have different needs. And so when we think about the future, like when I think about what I need at work, looks and feels really different than what my girls, who are 13 and 11, right, will need in the workplace. And so we have to have awareness. For the first time now, we have five generations in the workplace.
Yeah.
So it's a real opportunity to use this as a learning lab to say, let me pull all the data points, right, to just understand what humans need to find meaning in their work and for us to create a culture where we could do the great things and share our great gifts and talents, right? But it's going to look and feel different for different people.
I love this. Laura, let's talk about how do we make love make sense at work? And sense, you know, I think we've been talking about the feeling, the S-E-N-S-E of love, this feeling we want to have, this connection we want to have with our work. But I also want to talk about sense, C-E-N-T-S. Like, how do we make it work in a business M&A type of, how do we bring value to this on a balance sheet?
Yeah. So there's a whole volume of insight and information with respect to creating higher quality work environments that translate into higher levels of employee engagement, which translates into a number of measurable outcomes from an organizational standpoint. We can think, let's use Katie's example. Yeah. Here around the urologists. So if you think about the extrinsic value of a urological practice, a lot of that has to do with patient satisfaction, patient outcomes, limited risk and liability from a practitioner standpoint, yep. And referral, right? So to the extent that you can translate the love of the work, the love of caring for these patients to my understanding as a practitioner about the relationship I have to build, the curiosity I have to manifest in my relationship around listening to my patient talk to me about what matters specifically to me. What's the outcome I'm looking for? What is it that I fear? What haven't I explored that's a potential opportunity for me to benefit my life? To the extent that I understand as a practitioner what that looks and feels like, and I can help to lean into their needs, their desires, their fears, that translates to a better patient outcome, which limits my liability, increases the patient satisfaction, creates a higher, I mean, I hate to say it, but it creates a higher NPS score, and it creates a greater opportunity for referral with less liability to my practice. All of those things are externally and internally measurable in some way. And the satisfaction that I have as a practitioner or as a supplemental caregiver in this practice, I know that if I'm a nurse in this practice, my patients are being treated better. I will likely treat those patients better. I know that I'm being seen as an individual. My employee engagement score goes up, right? This is a self-reinforcing positive loop in that environment. Katie, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this as well.
So Laura, I love all of this. I think that you can add the extension to the why it makes sense, C-E-N-T-S, is what does it cost you to bring in a new doctor? What does it cost you to bring in, right, other partners in your practice? Right. And when we think about actually, you know, doing the analysis of how we bring people in and think about their role for the future, right? There is the investment. And of course, the patients are become part of that equation and become part of the story, right? Yeah. But it costs us more when we're creating a toxic environment, right, where we're not allowing people to come as themselves, to connect to the meaning of their work, to connect with people. And you know, I'll go back to Caroline's message earlier, is like, let's unlearn that there's no place for that in the workplace. Let's think about, right, the emotion that fuels why we do it in the first place,
right?
Why we perform organizational citizenship behaviors. We go above and beyond the scope of our job description because it's meaningful, right? And it matters. And so there's a place there, to your point, of doing this analysis to understand, right, the cost of, right, and where we see ROI of investment.
It's, yeah. You know, Katie, you're bringing this kind of full circle in the conversation. I am reminded of all of the times my younger sister and I played with each other when we were 7, 8, 9, 10. The choices to play roles like teacher or doctor or nurse or were based on a, you know, something that lived in our soul that was about the love of caring for others, being proficient in something, being an artist or a creator, helping other people learn and better themselves. I don't recall ever being in a circumstance where either one of us said, well, it was to make more money, right? That wasn't the thing that was driving the joy. And when you take that moment and you extrapolate that into our 20s and 30s and 60s, you know, why we're doing what we're doing may or may not follow along the theme of our 7-year-old self. But if it does, it's very often because we've found a love of something that is the thing that inspires, that propels, that provides the energy for whatever that endeavor is.
It's so well said. And Laura, I know you and I have talked about this a bit. It's like, I think even, you know, present day, we're often socially primed, right, to still consider work in like a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. And we need to unlearn that, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And, you yeah. know, how people, I think very much about work-life integration. I don't miss things with my girls. I deeply connect and am present for them. But, you know, I will often have people say, why do you work so much?
Right.
Why are you always traveling? Why are you writing another book? Why right. Do you ever take a break? And I'm like, I get to do this. Like, right. And right. I also get to set an example for my girls of work that I love. And I want them to grow up and think about, I can't wait to find what I love to do, right? And unlearn the, oh, I have to go to work, or, oh, it's Monday. I'm like, thank goodness it's Monday, right? Like, we get to do this work. And so there's a place there of that priming as we think about the future. And we think about what you mentioned as children, value creation, right? And as adults, how are we continuing to think about value creation, right? In all things love, right? In right. finding meaning in the work that we do and the connections of ourselves with the work that we do.
Yeah.
So important.
What if we accepted love as a foundational principle for leadership at work, but also in life? I think that this is just a different way to look at how we bring our gifts, our purpose to our work. And what you said resonates so deeply with me, because my experience is one of going to the corporate world and, you know, going into the business school and the master's and the learning that this is how you run the things. 9-to-5, 1 30-minute meeting after the other, running late to every single one of them, trying to get like all that stuff that you accept as a way of working when you join the system, and then to unlearn it and relearn the way that I actually create as a human being, which there are signs in my childhood from that, right? In all of our childhood, there are signs of what it is that lights us up on fire.
Yeah.
It's a process, and there's just different ways. What I've learned is that there's different ways to contribute value at work, and we don't all have to subscribe to this sort of structure that we think, especially when we're like coming out of college and undergrad, you know, we're like, oh, I'm going to join a big company. It's like not necessarily the best fit for you. So yeah, it resonates a lot with me. What can we tell leaders, you know, like, so our audience, what can we tell our audience to take from this conversation to start activate at work? What's a takeaway that people can use at work right now?
Yeah, Caroline, I think you've just primed everyone to think about, you know, leading with purpose, right? And so, you know, I've worked with so many leaders at all stages of their career. And I hear from so many who have said, I've never really done this work to think about my leadership philosophy, right? My personal purpose. And how does this align with the company's purpose, right? And so, you know, there's spaces there. And, you know, this is something for me is like at Moravian University, right? Our mission is to prepare each individual for a reflective life, fulfilling careers and transformative leadership in a world of change. That aligns so deeply with my personal purpose, right? That keeps me there, right? Through the ebb and flow of growth, right? Through lots of changes, right? But I'm like, there's an alignment of purpose. And so for all of us, as we do this work, it's like a takeaway of take the time to build that relationship with yourself, like really get to know yourself and know that we go through different seasons in our life, right? And I love to think about, you know, the seasons of Katie, the seasons of my career, right? Where I'm shedding leaves, right? And, you know, how I bloom the next round might look a little different than last season, right? But to really stay present with ourselves as we go through these seasons and to stay true to, right, leading with our purpose, right? And so there's an undertone of knowing your core values and kind of knowing how, you know, life experience, education, maturity all factor into how we change, right? And how we grow and how we create these versions of ourselves, you know, as we continue to just do better tomorrow.
So good. So true. We need to teach that, I think, earlier in the sort of traditional curriculum, like learning how to integrate your philosophy with that of a company, with that of your leadership principles, so that you can make choices in your career that accelerate what you want as an outcome. Have either of you seen curriculum that essentially is like self-awareness for business leaders, for example, or have you seen that in your work?
I just told Laura I'm building a class right now at Moravian University.
Amazing.
In our, you know, graduate business programs. And there is the undertone of, right, this class combines the individual and team level. And the first part of the work is that, right? Mm-hmm. And then we think about what does that mean as we work with and through others, right, to encourage, you know, the opportunity for us to shine in our very different ways, but to bring our unique, you know, attributes and passions and purpose and the alignment of values in the work we do.
Yeah. What if we all showed up as the biggest version of ourselves instead of trying to be fitting ourselves into a CV format like everybody else? Yeah. Laura, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, Katie and I have talked about this many, many times. The curriculum that I teach starts before we even begin talking about multi-level organizational change, we start with Arbinger Institute's The Anatomy of Peace. So we start with this idea that we are all whole humans, but we have separated ourselves into judgmentalism through a whole variety of societal norms and, you know, reasons for decision making. We need to move back to the idea that if we subjectify our relationships with other people, if we see them as whole humans first and seek to understand, empathize with their circumstances, seek to understand who they are, what their daily situation might be, we begin to view who we are in a different lens and who we are in relation to that person or this particular situation or as a part of this team in a very, very different way. And it really does, it changes your life, but we start there. Fundamentally, organization change starts there. So yeah.
Yeah. That's so, so, so good. Yeah. I want to take your course. Can I audit? That sounds amazing. Laura, did you have any questions?
Katie and I could talk for hours and hours and hours.
I'm like, what have we not covered that we wanted to? Because we could go on and on and on and on, and it will.
You know, what I was so inspired by in having this conversation, Caroline, with you and Katie, is this idea that we weren't skirting the conversation around the word love as a noun, as a verb, as a gerund, that when I approached this with Katie in the first place, instantaneously she said to me, oh no, it wasn't a euphemistic use of the word. I actually created this process working with leadership practitioners in the field of physical health, human health, that is based on the term, right? Yeah. Which, you know, I think we have been, to Caroline, to your point, we have been trained to step away from that, right? And mm-hmm. this is now the time where we're saying, wait a minute, you know, how about we embrace it as a part of, as a container for what we do, how we think, what we feel, the humanization of the environment that we live in. And that just in and of itself is so inspiring to me. So I have no more questions. I just want to say thank you both for stepping in, leaning into this conversation, and more importantly, leaning into this in the world.
Yeah, for real. And it blows my mind how simple it can be. Sometimes, you know, in my research on love, the emotion, the feel, like sometimes just using the word, it's that simple. Like for me, this journey started with one guy who said, I love this. In the business context, a man saying love at work made me go, oh, wait, this is different. This is something I need to look into. This is a different emotion. This is stepping into something that makes me feel whole with this colleague. We're going for what we love because we're going to have great outcomes from our creative design thinking collaboration. I knew it was going to be good. And that's what sort of started the journey. And it's as simple as trying on for size, maybe the word at work in a context where it's maybe unexpected, and starting the conversation, which is what we're inviting everybody in our audience to do. Let's talk about love at work.
And Caroline, I want to put a pin in what you said to listeners is, let's not overcomplicate. I think sometimes as humans, we create things that really don't exist in the overcomplication of, right, conversations that we could really get to basics and really get to know, right, the depths of people in that space, which is just so powerful.
Such a great point. Thank you so much. That's a mic drop moment, feels like to me.
Katie, we love you.
We love you.